Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I'm Joel Erickson. I'm joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. Nate, are the Colts making the playoffs?
At this moment, I will say yes, they're making the playoffs. It's at this point, they've done the thing that they've needed to show, which is that they can take care of teams that they're better than. And I think you look forward to the rest of the season. Can they get two more wins? So it depends on the right two games, two to three more wins. But given some of the quarterbacks they're going to face, especially like a Mitch Trubisky at home in a couple weeks in what was supposed to be one of their toughest remaining games against the Steelers, I think as of right now, adding Grover Stewart back into the mix, that they do have enough to manage that and what's become just sort of a chaotic bloodbath that is the AFC.
Yeah, I think the schedule is the biggest thing here. It's just like who they don't, like the quarterbacks they don't have to play down the stretch. You know, this is a season when the NFL has been hit with a ton of quarterback injuries to starting quarterbacks. The one they were going to see is Joe Burrow, and we'll get to the Bengals in a second. But they don't have to play Mahomes. They don't have to play Josh Allen. They don't have to play Tua. They don't have to play really any of the people who are above them in who are at the top of the quarterback rating and standings right now. They don't have to play any of those guys. They're playing a bunch of guys who are either backups until they get to C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud is the one who's the exception to that. But there's a case to be made that if you play well enough, that game against the Texans, it might not be. I know people are talking about it as like it's like a win and get in thing. It might be two playoff teams just playing out their final game for positioning, the way things are working. Because some of the other teams that are in that mix with them, Pittsburgh and Cleveland, have very bad quarterback issues, you know? And so they're going to play Pittsburgh, presumably without Kenny Pickett here, after they play the Bengals. So I think that's the biggest thing. It's just these quarterbacks they've been playing, because we've now seen it 4 weeks in a row. They've played either rookie quarterbacks or backup quarterbacks or compromised quarterbacks, and you know they've got their they've won all four of those games. So I think if you're playing compromised quarterbacks, it's going to help.
Yeah, no question about it. Especially, it's just like they have certain games on the schedule that we sit down there. The thing that's hard is each week feels like a bit of a coin toss with this team because they have their own backup quarterback in. So it's like it's hard to see them just putting a team away, just being too much for an opponent. But they're also in every game, so it very much feels like a coin toss. But they've had certain games that we've sat down there right before it starts and we're like, if this team wants to be a playoff team, this is the game it just finds a way to win. And if they lose it, it's probably an indictment of where they're at and the fact that they're not ready. And I remember saying that right before this last game against the Titans. And as wacky as that was, and they went down 17-7, and there were a lot of moments they could have lost it, they found a way to be the team that made the clutch plays late in regulation to get it tied, and then to pull ahead and get it to overtime. And then on one electric drive in overtime to pull that game out. So as long as they keep doing that, they'll be okay. They're gonna, you know, they can drop a game in Houston if they're, you know, if that's a matter of their quarterback's a lot better than yours. You know, that's gonna be reality sometimes. But the other games on their schedule right now, you would like to think that is not going to be the narrative. You know, you've got Mitch Trubisky, you've got Taylor Heineke, Desmond Ridder, I kind of forget.
It's really hard to tell with the Falcons.
It's hard to tell with the Falcons. You've got Aiden O'Connell with the Raiders. And then this week you got Jake Browning. And to be honest with you, I think that this week might be the second toughest behind C.J. Stroud. Just at least based on what Jake Browning was able to do against the Jaguars, you know, putting up more than 300 yards and leading that victory. Even though Trevor Lawrence got hurt, they had a big-time day on offense. And the fact that there's the offense he's in, the track record it has over the past couple of years, I thought Monday night was a bit of a reminder that while Joe Burrow, you know, losing Joe Burrow takes something off the ceiling of these Bengals when they were a Super Bowl contender, there's still a floor by the fact that they've got Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, Joe Mixon out of the backfield, a stable scheme that's been in place for a few years that Jake Browning is now able to sort of step into and manage and know what he's doing with guys around him to help him out. Kind of feels like when you look at where the Colts have gone over the past month, they've faced kind of four straight teams that, to their credit, they've taken care of. They've done the thing they needed to do. But the passing games they've faced have either been banged up quarterback in Baker Mayfield, rookie quarterbacks in Will Levis and Bryce Young, or a quarterback literally benched in that game in Mac Jones. The last time they kind of faced a non-injured, non-rookie quarterback was Derek Carr, and it didn't go well for them. So I think they have a little bit of something to prove this week, going on the road against a Bengals team that is on a backup quarterback, but he seems to be playing pretty well, and they've got the weapons that if they're not ready to go, like, they can definitely take advantage of them.
Did you watch the Monday night game at all?
Nope. I took that night off of watching sports, so did not watch them and did not watch the Pacers.
Jake Browning looked good, really good. And it's always hard to tell, like, if it's a bad night for a defense, if it's a good night for a quarterback, especially when you have the, you only have the TV copy, you can't see the full field. I always feel like that's an important thing for me, is to be able to see the full field to get a feel for how a quarterback's playing. But it's really hard to discount 32 of 37 for 354 yards and a 76-yard touchdown to Ja'Marr Chase. You know, it was really good from him. And he honestly, the Bengals were in control of that game. The only reason it was so close was that Zach Taylor had one of the silliest trick play decisions I've seen in a while, where they tried it inside the 20 and it got picked off. Peyton Manning was losing it on the Manning cast, that they let a wide receiver throw the ball instead of him, or instead of the quarterback, who was, I think at the time, was either 17 of 19 or 18 of 21 or something like that. The Jaguars secondary has been kind of gettable, I think, if you don't throw interceptions this year. But at the same time, it was a little bit arresting to, like, have thought of this game against the Bengals as an easy game, and instead it's not, you know? It's supposed to be a game against a lost backup quarterback. And instead you're getting a backup quarterback who, I think, if you give the right plan to, he can execute it, which is a really big difference that we've seen in the NFL this season, is can you play with your backup quarterback? Can you not play with your backup quarterback?
Yeah, it's sort of become the challenge of their season, is can they rise above given the spot that they're in with their backup quarterback. And this is where the credit goes to so many people within the Colts right now, with Shane Steichen, Gus Bradley, really what they're doing on both sides of the ball to compensate for personnel losses. Really their lines on both sides of the ball, the way that they're second in sacks on defense, and an offensive line that is really, now they can trust in, like, these situations where they have to go down and score late in a game, very different than last season. You know, the run game up until this week, this is probably another side area where side concern is just, I think it's regressing now that Jonathan Taylor's not out there, and Zach Moss is, he's carried it all season long, but it's, it's getting tough late in the year, but they've delivered for most of the year. And then really what's helped out the Colts so much is just how good their wide receivers suddenly are. Michael Pittman Jr. looking like a number one. At least eight catches, four straight weeks now, eight times in the season he's done that. Alec Pierce had his first 100-yard game and really should have had a lot more. And then he's been quiet for the past couple weeks, but Josh Downs has been terrific as a rookie, and his on-pace numbers are probably still over 900 yards. And so they have insulated the quarterback they have well, but even within doing that, their passing game numbers overall, yards when it comes to yards per attempt, the number of times they're finding the end zone, touchdowns, interception, it's not been very good. But they've survived because it's often been better than what they're going up against, which is, again, is a statement on both what they're up against, the quality of offenses, but also credit to the Colts for their pass rush has really just pounded these guys. And so mostly the Colts have not gone up against that type of defense, that type of, you know, that type of dominant defense that can really make them pay for the issues they have and let it snowball. And their defense is the one that's jumping on teams in that way. So this will be another week where we're going to kind of see. This is the first one, though. I should say it's the only one in the past four outside of the Buccaneers where I felt like I would have to say coming into this game, the opponent has the clear edge at quarterback.
The interesting part is with the way the Colts are playing, the Colts are eighth in the league in offense in terms of points, which is, I mean, I know historically everyone's talked about yards as total offense, but total offense should be points. It should, like, it shouldn't be scoring offense and total offense. It should be total offense
and, I don't know, yards gained offense or something. Points are the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
Points are the only thing that matters, but it's one of those things where if you look at I have a story that's up probably by the time you're listening to this on the remarkable nature of this, but they're eighth in the league in points. Their quarterback is 24th in the league among qualified passers in terms of quarterback rating. And the other seven teams in front of them, all of the lowest any of their quarterbacks are in quarterback rating is 13th. And that's Jalen Hurts, who also rushes for like a touchdown a game. So the way the Colts offense is playing with their backup quarterback is really, really hard to, like, it's hard to put into words how good a job Shane Steichen is doing, because it's right there in the numbers. Like the Colts do not have a lot of yards per attempt. Gardner Minshew he's kind of playing it like you'd expect him to play as a backup, and Shane Steichen is still scoring points. They're still scoring just a ton of points.
Yeah, and I think it's just, again, worth shouting out the offensive line and how they've transformed what this team is from last year to this year. Last year, they were the reason, the biggest reason why that whole plan around Matt Ryan just completely fell apart. This year, they're the reason this is working without Anthony Richardson and with some other, you know, issues going on. No Jelani Woods all year, Jonathan Taylor in and out. Like, the offensive line has found a way to really limit quarterback hits and also at times be very lethal on the ground. And those two things are what you have to have if you're going to put in just about any backup quarterback, especially the one that they have, who Gardner Minshew can operate, you know, the RPO game very well. He can kind of manage in terms of being a leader out there to get you in position, but he's not going to, you know, do very well when he's under pressure. And they've kept pressure off him really, really well this season. At times, the pressure that happens is he's sort of running into it. But for the most part, they have let him feel, you know, drop back and throw a quick game and thrive that way. And then what that's done is it's reaffirmed some things I think we thought last year about the Colts receivers, which is that we're all better than their production line really indicated. That Reggie Wayne's doing a tremendous job, I think, developing the skill sets, the young players within those skill sets. The room is incredibly close, and we're just seeing the way it meshes up together, where you've got Alec Pierce's deep speed, and we're seeing he is capable of making those plays when they give him the chance and they give him the ball in stride. We're seeing, you know, Michael Pittman Jr. has been that guy that teams know is going to get the ball, and he's just really changed the way that he prepares for teams, the way that he studies opponents and matches up his route depth with, you know, playing negative back to the ball to create separation for some of these yak plays. And then even though he's been quiet the last couple weeks, Josh Downs has, you know, he's been such a natural fit in the slot, especially a guy that Gardner can kind of just work good ball placement to and let him go from there. So they've just – the offensive line stabilizing – Like, I don't know that the offensive line, I don't know quite where they rank in some of these things, if they're, you know, a top five offensive line. But the difference from last year to this year is so night and day that it's brought out the upside in the backfield and the wide receivers and let those guys sort of carry the backup quarterback. And that's the type of mixture, especially when you obviously add in what Shane's doing. That's what I think a lot of these other teams on backups don't have. They don't have the ability to lift that guy up. The Colts do, and that's why they're winning.
I would say that there's probably some noise in the stats anyway with the offensive line because of Minshew's tendency to run into sacks. I don't know that I've seen a stat that didn't look like they were maybe
estimating those correctly.
It just seems like they're. I've seen a few sacks that were described offensive linemen like the day after, and when I thought about seeing it in game, it felt like it was something that he'd done. I do have some good news for the Colts offense, which has been very good at scoring points. The Bengals defense is terrible. Do you want to hear some numbers on the Bengals defense?
Sure.
They are 32nd in yards per game, 32nd in yards per play, 27th in rushing yards per game, 31st in rushing yards per carry. They are 27th in passing yards per game, but also 31st in passing yards per play. These are not the numbers of a 6-6 team, but it's partially because of this. If the Bengals are going to beat you, they're going to turn you over. They're 5th in interception rate. Their pass rush, despite having Trey Hendrickson, is kind of more middle of the road. All of the conversion stats, except for fourth down, they're weirdly good on fourth down. Which might just be a sample size type thing, is that they're pretty much all bad. It's just, if you can protect the ball against Cincinnati, you can get a lot of points on them, because they're tied for 8th in the NFL with 19 turnovers, and 12 of those are interceptions. That's how the Colts offense doesn't have a good day. And Gardner Minshew has probably overly protected the football in some of these games. You know, I think him sliding before they got to the first down marker is a good example of this. But, like, in this game, it probably matters more than any other game, because that's Cincinnati's only way to beat you.
Yeah, it's just surprising to see the Bengals slide that much on defense. You know, after certainly in the postseason, that group has risen up. They do tend to get better late in the year, but still, I think they're feeling the loss of Jesse Bates in the offseason. Leaving for the Falcons has left them with two rookies in their secondary, and run defense was not their strength either. It's just sort of all gone wrong for them outside of what you mentioned, which is their ability to create turnovers, which is, I think, is a mix of Trey Henderson can still be a guy that gives you problems, and Lou Anarumo, was considered one of the best defensive coordinators, is just really good at occasionally bringing the coverage disguise, the right mix of pressure to confuse the quarterback into a turnover. And it is something the Colts are going to have to watch for, because I know since they had that turnover flurry against the Jaguars and Browns, those numbers have gotten normal for them in terms of mostly for the turnovers they're having. But again, context matters so much here, is that they have had, you know, they had two games where they basically didn't have to put the ball in play at all for any reason against the Patriots and Panthers, and Shane Steichen smartly didn't. But the two games that have been back to facing at least something like an NFL offense, Colts have had turnover risk for sure. I mean, Gardner Minshew threw a pick against the Buccaneers, had another one that Alec Pierce so wonderfully broke up, fumbled at the goal line against the Titans, and then it doesn't count as a turnover in the stats, but he got picked off on the two-point conversion play. You have a couple, you know, basically two-ish turnovers a game. That's where it can, if they're in a spot now where they're kind of like they were last week, where they are having to answer scores, or they're having to push it, they can't just go kind of safe mode. That's what I think is going to happen against the Bengals, is because of their weapons on offense, the things they can force you to do. That's where that's the Bengals' formula, I think, is have a competent enough offense that you force the opposing passing game to take a few risks, and then that's where your defense, where you give up a ton of yards in production, can occasionally get the right mix of pressure and a confusing look to turn them over, especially for the Colts going as an indoor team going outdoors in December on the road. That is something to watch for.
Those are good points, especially since there was, you know, two picks that didn't happen that could have. One of them was kind of Trey Sermon's fault, that one he batted up into the air and nearly got picked off. The other one was like the weird one at the end where the defensive lineman almost picked it off.
Oh, yeah.
So you can't have those. It's a big game for Bernhard Raimann because Trey Hendrickson has 11.5 sacks. They have 32 overall. Trey Hendrickson has 11.5. I think the next most is 5 for Sam Hubbard. Essentially, if you can block Trey Hendrickson, you can block the Bengals. And Bernhard Raimann has obviously played very well this season. Big game for him against Hendrickson. And then, you know, just a big game in terms of you can't – if you put the ball – it seems like if you put the ball in jeopardy, the Bengals are going to pick it off. It's interesting. I think you made a really good point there just about the fact that they've had a little bit of – you feel – well, let me rephrase that. Do you feel like they've had a little bit of turnover luck just with some of the near misses we just mentioned?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly, the way that they get tracked in there. There just have been so many play. There have been so many moments from Gardner that have introduced risk whenever he's had to hold the ball beyond 2.5 seconds. That if you have a situation, if the pass rush is getting home, if you know guys are making the plays in coverage, they should be able to turn that kind of. That kind of play into turnovers. And so for the most part against the Patriots, and actually it was mostly just against the Panthers, the Colts were able to not do anything even remotely risky. But even the Patriots game, some of Gardner Minshew's play under pressure like that, it gave you a lot of nervous feelings about what is going to result from this play. And I think he's gotten that in his head, and he started to find ways to, even when it's looking frantic, throw the ball away, or just I had a play against the Buccaneers where he just didn't scramble, just not going to risk it, didn't slide last week. Like he is looking out for that a lot, but that's where the when he's not in a situation where you could do that punt and still win the game, that's where I think if he's kind of forced to make throws. We saw that more against the Browns and Jaguars, is that those offenses, they were, and even somewhat their defenses, were explosive enough that kind of caused an explosive answer out of the Colts. They got some explosive plays, but they turned it over a lot. So it's just every game still feels like that that fine line between how do you be aggressive without turning it over, because it doesn't seem like there's an easy way out of both of those things.
Well, one of the ways that I think they've been aggressive without turning it over is some of the trick play stuff, which it seems weird saying like trick plays are eliminating risk, but essentially Shane Steichen is using deception a little bit to create big plays. You know, if it's the RPO for a first down to Michael Pittman on fourth and short, the Mo Alie-Cox play, the trick play Germany, it's called Germany, the reverse flea flicker. He's kind of manufactured some explosive plays with those calls. I think that's another sign of just the job he's doing, is knowing that he needs explosive plays, knowing that if he asks to get them the traditional way by pushing it down the field. Now they did it last week against the Titans. And so if you're going against another bad defense, and the Bengals seem like they're a bad defense like that, you may be able to get them traditionally. But if he can't get them traditionally, it seems like he's done a good job of manufacturing them. You think about especially the ones against I'm blanking now. Who did they play before the Titans? The Buccaneers. Especially the ones against the Buccaneers. Those were not difficult throws. They weren't downfield throws. They were short, quick throws, but they went for 24 and 31 yards. Those are explosive plays, you know? Like, I think that's one of the secrets to what he's done so far this year, since they found out that Anthony Richardson wasn't going to be the starting quarterback, is he's found ways to kind of manufacture some big plays down the field when you can't just do like what the Chiefs do and just drop back.
Yeah, he's been the hero of the past month for them, is finding ways to cut down that turnover risk while, like you said, introducing explosiveness that really is play design operative, that but low risk on the quarterback. Those have almost all been, you know, there's some version of either a pitch back, a fake, in deception, in totally based on down, and he's finding the right times to run it down a distance. A couple of those were fourth and one, so you expect them to just to hand it off. It becomes imperative, though, because losing Jonathan Taylor stresses your need to generate those explosives. You don't have that guy in the backfield who is a risk of just taking it to the house or even at least ripping, you know, what's a 10-yard blocked play into a 45-yard run. Zach Moss just isn't that same style of player. I know he's had a couple explosive plays when it's lined up, but for the most part, if a team is, and maybe the Bengals can't, their defense has struggled against the run all year, so maybe this is a get-right game for them just off of a tough performance last week against the Titans. But for the most part, the explosiveness is going to have to come in either play design or as much as they can get the ball to, like, an Alec Pierce down the field. So last week was an interesting, you know, example where they, for the first time, really felt like they were emphasizing that, trying it. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. But the payoff to those plays is so huge. One 36-yard touchdown and the other, the long catch down the sideline that set up the game-winning touchdown. They got to hit a couple of those. If you can hit a couple explosive plays a game between play design and Alec Pierce, you know, you'll have a good chance to win just about any game. But you know, that's where there is such a need for that, though, because it's not something right now that I think you can count on coming from your run game, which just kind of adds to the challenge of life with a backup quarterback.
I'm not really sure what to make of the run game right now. It feels like they've had just as many games where they've run for 150 yards and look great the way they did against Tampa Bay as they have, you know, games like I think it was like 50-something yards last week. It was 70 and 78 against the Panthers and Patriots. It doesn't feel like you can count on the running game to be there. Now, it might show up. And the matchup this week against the Bengals, you feel like their defense has been so bad against everything that you probably have a good matchup. But, like, it's just hard to tell if the running game is going to be there in a big way or not at this point. And, yeah, I don't know if I have a good answer for that either in terms of, you know, obviously, like, last week sort of makes sense because Tennessee had a good front and some good stats against the run. But the week before that, they'd played Tampa Bay, who's great against the run, or was until they played the Colts. And then 2 weeks before that, they played the Panthers, who were awful against the run. And she kept them to 70 yards. The rhyme or reason to what happens in the run game is pretty difficult. And it hasn't been in even running back specific. Now, I do think Jonathan Taylor has played better than Zach Moss and created more yards. But they've had games where the overall numbers are rough, even though Taylor looks good, looks like he's creating yards. It's really hard to get a handle on what the running game is going to do week in and week out for me.
Yeah, it's been strange because just the perfect way to break it down is the two games against the Titans. They ran absolutely insane. Zach Moss's best game of the season the first time they faced him, and then this time they couldn't get anything going.
And I think it was 193 the first game, and I think 57 the second game.
Yeah. And the same guy was sort of the bell cow of both of those games. And I don't know, same offensive line. So it's just kind of odd. It's teams roll out different plans, and the Colts are responding to it. And they're either getting teams out of, you know, this bear front, diamond front, or sometimes they're not. Like the Bengals, the Buccaneers game specifically, they were throwing a lot. And then also, you know, they run so much RPO to where either if the run wasn't open, it was a quick throw. They executed that so well that they got the Buccaneers to stop playing that defense. But they aren't doing that same thing every single week to that degree. And so it's interesting. It's just, I think there is also, there's not a floor to this run game right now, though, because Jonathan Taylor's not out there creating some things. Zach Moss you know, has had a very nice year, but I do think that he's starting to show a little bit of just, you know, he is human. He is, you can't put everything on him in terms of his running styles between the tackles.
He's not an elite back. Is that what you're trying to say? Yeah.
He's not an elite back, and it's just I think some part of him is wearing down a little bit. At least if you're going to make him – he took every single carry for them this week. I just don't know that that's the best that you're going to keep him fresh and efficient doing that. And so also if he were to get hurt, you know, sure hope that doesn't happen, but they just don't seem like they have another running back that they trust. And the quarterback doesn't, outside of a few occasional, you know, scrambles at the goal line, which have been fun, does not really add to the production there. So it's hard to say. Like, it just feels like you get a sense early on in a game if this is going to be a day where they run pretty well or not. And I don't know. If they don't have it this week, though, that's going on the road, outdoors, that's – it's a little – gets you a little bit more nervous.
Yeah, the Carolina game is the one that's kind of like nagging me right now about the run game, is because Carolina's defense, that was the blueprint on them, right, was that they just gave up tons of yards in the running game. And they kind of did early. Taylor had like a good drive, and then Carolina switched its front. It was over. And so, like, yes, looking – like I said, looking at it, they should run all over the Bengals. Bengals have been terrible against the run. Maybe they won't. And I don't really know how to predict that. I don't really know how to predict whether or not it's going to be like that or not. Because on the flip side of it, you have Tampa Bay. Like, Todd Bowles is known for stopping the run. Colts ran all over them. It's just kind of a weird thing to try to get a handle on with this offense. Ultimately, you know, we're kind of breaking all this down and looking at it. It's interesting because you're almost like wondering, like, when is this 4-game win streak, when's it going to end? Because it's clear that the Colts are playing above what you would expect given the fact that they've lost their starting quarterback. Jonathan Taylor's not in there. They've had other injuries. Shaq Leonard didn't end up coming back to the level that they were hoping he would get back to. The secondary has been iffy for most of the season. Like, there's a lot of reasons that you would think that maybe this team shouldn't be 7-5 and in a playoff spot with looking at it like, you know, they're going to be favored in a lot of these games down the stretch. But they are. They're here. And that's what I keep thinking is, like, we've been making jokes now about where we're going to end up in the playoffs. Nate likes to keep – well, I'm going to let you tell them what you've been threatening me with. With the Colts making the playoffs.
Well, this is why you were watching Monday night, rooting hard for the Bengals, because the Jaguars have been flirting with that 2-seed line, which means if the Colts were to get like the 7-seed, they would travel to Joel's favorite place in the universe for the first round matchup in Jacksonville. And I've been pitching to our editor that if that happens, just to bring you guys the very best coverage that you could ever get, Joel would spend the week down there covering the Jaguars angle so he could have just that full, you know, full week in Jacksonville to build up to that matchup.
This is what I get for making you do a villain of a week every week, isn't it? Is that that's the genesis of
I've
this,
I've become
right?
The villain in your life.
The worst part though is, and not for you guys, but I think you guys will enjoy that I came up with this. I realized that the worst case scenario is not going to Jacksonville in the first round. The worst case scenario is that the Colts make the playoffs and avoid the Jaguars in the first round. And I feel like, okay, it's fine. And it, like, the seeding doesn't work for them to play them in the second round or whatever. And then something crazy happens and the Colts win their game and whatever else has to happen. And after I think I've escaped going to Jacksonville twice in one season, it happens to me in the second round of the playoffs. I think that's the real danger. I think that's worse than what you brought up in the first place.
Yep, and it would have something happening where it would look like they're for sure going to, like, Miami. And they
Dolphins would lose
on Hail Mary, and you'd realize that it's actually Jacksonville.
Exactly. That's exactly the type of scenario. We're like, I get my hopes up. Like the and like the Colts like win on Saturday, and it's like, oh, okay, they're definitely going to go to Miami. And then something like you said, like I'm just sitting there on Sunday, and it's like, oh no, we have to change that. We have to change our plane plans. I have to fly to Jacksonville instead.
Yeah. Last time we were there, there were these ripped off highway signs that we made.
I'm still so about. Furious that those exist.
I think if Joel has to go back down there, there'll be a lot more like ripped up stuff and destruction in that city.
From me is what you're suggesting? Yes.
Just raging that you have to work there.
That's where my head's at right now. I'm concerned. I mean, obviously, I think Colts fans are probably concerned that they have to go back to Jacksonville, just given gestures and Jacksonville's general direction. But I'm with you because I don't like going there, and so that's where my head's at right now in terms of the Colts playoff push. Is how do we avoid me having to fly to Jacksonville in the first round? Now, I will say this. An alternate Joel, positive Joel development has arisen with the injury to Trevor Lawrence.
So you're saying you're happy Trevor got hurt?
No, that's mean. I would never say that. I'm saying, if he were to miss time, which, I mean, I know he has a high ankle sprain and the Jaguars are trying to say he's going to play and all that stuff. Okay, just saying. What if the Colts win the division and the Jaguars have to come here?
Oh.
And then I'm out of it entirely.
See, I gave you the lane to just say, no, you were looking out for Trevor's health and he needs a rest for the next month. Don't play any games. Your long-term matters so much. The Jaguars can just fall out of positioning in the
given
South.
Given where that conversation started, the listeners would know what I was know that, like, but that's my out. My out is the very low percentage chance. I think it's low percentage because I think Lawrence is probably going to be back.
Some point. The math on it is they're currently a game behind the Jaguars, but it feels like two because of the tiebreaker and with so few games left. You know, if the Jaguars go 2-3, the Colts have to go 4-1.
And the Jaguars have to play Baltimore, but essentially other than that, they don't have a lot of meat on their schedule left either. So, like, it does seem like a long shot, but it's the long shot that keeps me from going back to Jacksonville.
Mm. You got to have hope.
Yeah, well, especially since, like, Nate came up with this idea, like, 3 weeks ago.
You should have seen just pure terror that went down Joel's face when I did.
I hadn't thought of it at all. I hadn't thought of it one bit. In fact, I think the way the conversation started, maybe it wasn't 3 weeks ago, maybe it was 2 weeks ago. It feels like 3 weeks because we're already halfway through the next week. But it was after they beat Tampa Bay, and I said I could go to Miami in the first week of the playoffs. And Nate immediately was like, or you could go back to Jacksonville. And my brain hadn't even allowed me to go there. I just hadn't even thought about it.
Hey, they're both Florida. Are they not the same thing?
That's the worst. No.
we'll ask Stephen Holder sometime. He's from Miami.
The Miami native. We'll ask him if it's the same as Jacksonville.
Yep.
That might get more mean stuff than I say.
Yeah, but I'm probably going to keep that here in the podcast. I don't want to get hit.
Anyway. So that's your fun little interlude to know that Nate is causing me nightmares. And the worst part is your scenarios are much more plausible than mine is.
Yeah, no. The real terror in you is realizing that actually was quite plausible.
Yeah, the math is not as good for me in terms of the Jaguars having to come up here. But hey, the good news is I know people listening to this podcast are on my side. They don't want me to go to Jacksonville either.
No, they don't. They don't want anybody associated with the Colts to go to Jacksonville. Though, wouldn't it be amazing if that was the one time that they, they got off the schneid and they won?
Jacksonville. Yes, that would be a really great storyline
for someone to cover. That's not
That would be a really great storyline. They could also just break their streak next year when we have to go. Not this year when we don't have to go.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever think we would – look what we are. We're here in week 14 now, and we are discussing where the Colts are going to go in the playoffs. This is not where I thought we would end up when Anthony Richardson went down for the year, but that is sort of the fun nature of this season.
Yeah, it's the flip side of last season. Last season it started out with lots of hopes and promise, and it ended up being like the worst thing to cover ever. And this year has been the opposite. Not that we expected it to be like the worst thing ever. I was pretty excited about covering Richardson. We just didn't know if it would translate to the team the way it has. Although I do think Kevin Bowen deserves credit for saying this schedule gives a lot of opportunity to the Colts. He was definitely right about that. But as soon as Richardson went down, I don't think I saw this happening at all. So it is very interesting to find out that we're here talking about a team that they're going to be in the playoff mix down to the wire now. I mean, 7-5, I think, definitely puts you in that spot, given the quarterbacking situations of some of these other AFC teams and the teams that have lost. The Broncos losing last week. The Chargers are like almost out of it, kind of. They kind of have to like win out.
And they haven't even lost their superstar quarterback.
Yeah, like they're in this to the end now. And that's, like I said, I'll end this where I started it. It's a really remarkable what Shane Steichen's doing in terms of what he hasn't had. They've missed Jonathan Taylor now for five games this season. They only had Anthony Richardson for 170 snaps. You can throw in not having their preferred tight end, probably their preferred tight end. They've never said that. That's just me guessing. And then, like I said, not getting Shaq Leonard back to who Shaq Leonard was supposed to be. The secondary has its issues. It's pretty remarkable that we're talking about this team this way at this point.
Yeah, if they continue staying in the hunt like they are, he should be in the running for Coach of the Year. Doesn't sound like he's going to get as, you know, that there's as much buzz for that nationally as there should be. But kind of think between him, D'Amico Ryans of the Texans, Kevin Stefanski of the Browns, those are the teams that are either winning with a rookie quarterback or overcoming just so much carnage at that position. And that's usually not the way to try to make it in the playoffs in the AFC. And that's why I brought up the Chargers, the fact that there are teams out there that have elite quarterbacks and still can't win. I think it does put a little bit more spotlight on the coaches like Shane Steichen who are overcoming such like crippling injuries and sometimes just flat out poor play at that position in a league where that's usually what wins and loses.
Colts have an interesting one coming up this week against the Bengals. It's a big one considering that the Bengals are back to 6-6 now, because that is another team that is in the hunt for a wild card. They're only a game behind you. They win the game and all of a sudden they have the edge in head to head. So this is actually a pretty big game for the Colts. The first of a couple down the stretch here, because Pittsburgh, like Kenny Pickett's out, but Kenny Pickett wasn't playing well. So that's going to be another one between two teams competing for playoff spots. You've got Houston. This is the first one against the Bengals. I think a much more interesting game after Monday night than we realized. And the Colts are in the middle of their playoff push. For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, this has been Joel A. Erickson and Nate Atkins. We'll be back again Sunday night, probably on the highway back from Cincinnati, breaking down whatever happens in this Colts-Bengals game.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.